Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to City Hall for tonight's special committee of the whole meeting and the regularly scheduled City Council meeting. I would like to note that earlier today there was a major announcement made that we did not have a chance to share with the Alderman, but we have successfully annexed West Chicago for parking. I'm waiting for somebody. Did everyone get Mrs. McKittrick's email?
Well, it was April 1st today.
Yeah. It was a good one. It was a good one. It was a good one.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And that was our second choice.
I only saw the
St. Charles was
exactly. We have a special committee of the whole meeting tonight. Let the record show that all the members of the City Council are present. Our items of business include item 2A, which is to consider draft ordinance amending Title 4, Chapter 2, Section 4-2-13, liquor license fees and number, adding one Class C2 liquor license for the Geneva Wine Cellar and Tasting Room to be located at 227 South 3rd Street.
So moved.
Motion by Alderman Singer.
Second.
Seconded by Alderman Cummings, who is known to imbibe in the red wine every now and then. We do have the applicant with us this evening, Mr. Buchanan.
Yes.
Welcome, sir. Come on up to the podium.
Thanks.
Now, we had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Buchanan at the chamber event last week, and I think it's just fascinating how you came to this evening tonight after your illustrious career in law.
Well,
and perhaps
would you like to hear about that?
Mr. Radovich will find this perhaps most interesting.
Well, I'll keep it brief. And if you want to hear more, I could talk forever about me. But in a nutshell, I've been a practicing lawyer, commercial litigator for 22 years. I moved here from Lexington, Kentucky, where I was in law enforcement for 8 years as a county deputy, and then I ran for constable. It's a similar position to sheriff. We did evictions, arrest warrants, civil summonses, had general police powers. I did a lot of moonlighting at bars, and so I've had my experience of dealing with drunks. Tried to use diplomacy first, and when I was in law enforcement, I had the ability to use more than diplomacy, but I found that diplomacy usually worked. So I can't claim any particular expertise in retail. I've never worked in retail, but I have been collecting wines and studying wines, mainly French wines, mainly Bordeaux within the French wine area, intensely for 30 years. And it's been a passion of mine. It's something I've always wanted to make more than a hobby. I wanted to make my living doing it. So when the space at 227 South 3rd Street became available, I saw the for rent sign out front every day as I drive down 3rd Street to get on the Metra to go into the city. That's where I practice law. And I think, that's my retirement store, but it's coming along about 10 years too early. So after much ruminating and soul searching and many, many discussions with my lovely wife, Audrey, who's right here tonight, I decided to take the plunge. And I was fortunate enough to get the space that has historically been the Wine Cellar, S-E-L-L-E-R, or the Geneva Wine Cellar, S-E-L-L-E-R. And I was able to get that space without having to purchase a business because the last time there was a wine business there was more than 6 months ago, and it went out of business. So I did not buy the corporation. I did not buy the business. I did not buy the inventory. We're starting from scratch with a new LLC, which I formed several months ago, known as Geneva Wine Cellars, C-E-L-L-A-R-S, and Tasting Room. And it will be for on-premise and off-premise consumption. We'll sell wines by the bottle for off-premise consumption and have a small wine bar that's kind of an afterthought to the retail store that will allow people to sample some wines and see if they like them before they buy a bottle or a case. So that is pretty much the nutshell summary of who I am. I'll say this, and Mr. Radovich maybe will appreciate it. The reason I'm doing this is the very same reason that Jim Barrett, who was the founder of Chateau Montelena, said after 26 years of practicing law, he said that, "I'm tired of putting frowns on people's faces. I want to put smiles on their faces." And that's what I'd like to do here. I'd like to be Geneva's go-to wine merchant and wine educator, and I would very much appreciate your support in that regard.
You didn't bring any samples.
I did not.
No, only the Girl Scouts do that.
Alderman Brown.
Yes, that's a simple question. Many of the counties around Lexington are dry. Were you constable of a dry county?
No, I was not. Fayette County is very wet, although it took a long time to get around to selling on Sundays, as I recall.
I see. But that's probably, it was wet probably because it was surrounded by dry counties, correct?
Absolutely. We had lots of people from surrounding counties come to the big city, which is what they called it, of Lexington.
Thank you.
It's the Brown Hotel, right?
That's Louisville.
That's Louisville.
Or if Louisville if you're in Kentucky, Louisville if you're an Illinoisian.
Illinoisian.
And we always knew.
To table this matter until he pronounces our statement. No. Mrs. Buchanan, would you like to add anything?
I would like to add 30 seconds worth.
Oh. My God, you're both talkers, aren't you?
Yes, but like I said, 30 seconds, starting now. Me, my husband, and my two boys, we're all like holding our hands and holding our breath, and we're hoping to jump into this and watch Al succeed wildly. So the first step is to get a license.
Awesome.
So, yeah, let's just do that.
And you yield the 11 seconds back to your husband? Any other questions for Mr. or Mrs. Buchanan? A voice vote is sufficient since this will be considered at the council meeting later this evening. All in favor of the applicant and presenting or providing the license as requested, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? New business. I believe we have Mr. Simon. Oh, there he is. Hey, Mike. You want to join us? I think all of you were notified that Mr. Simon would be joining us this evening regarding an issue concerning the newly developed James and Campbell parking lot.
I'm here, excuse me, this evening as one of the surviving members of the erstwhile, one of Kevin's favorite terms, Joint Parking Committee, which dissolved some 12 years ago. And for those of you who don't remember, up until it dissolved, the Joint Parking Committee was made up of three chamber members and three council members. Alderman Burns was one of the council members. Alderman Brown was one of the council members. And I was one of the chamber members. And we tried very hard to create parking for customers and employees with limited success. One of our initiatives that we were quite proud of was buying the Natalini property, which probably was 14 years ago, time flies. And that was part of an initiative to create parking for employees in places that aren't obvious to customers. So we felt by buying the property between James and Campbell in that alleyway that's now a parking lot, that would be a good place for employees to park and get the employees' cars out of spaces that could better be used for customer parking. We tried to do that in the block to the south, working with other landowners, but to no avail. And as we all know, sometimes the clock works very slowly, and by the time the parking lot was built this past year, city staff had turned over to the extent that none of the people who were in engineering or in community development knew of the original plan. So the lot was signed for three-hour parking, which means for customers, and it's not being used. Hopefully I've got, nope, that isn't it. That ain't it either.
Well, Pete said that you had.
Hang on.
Oh, good. Sorry.
They're right. Cool. These three. One, two, and three.
Thank you.
Click those. You can
okay. So just to give you an idea, I took pictures 3 weeks ago on a Monday. This is what the lot looked like midday. 2 weeks ago on a Wednesday, midday. 2 weeks ago on Friday, midday. In short, people don't know the lot exists, and it's not used for the purpose it was originally intended. It's not being used for the way that the Joint Parking Committee wanted to expend the money. I'm fortunate at Little Traveler that we have what we still call the Siegel lot for our employees to park in, so they don't have to leave every 3 hours. When I was running Merrill Lee, our employees did have to go out and move their cars every few hours, sometimes leaving customers, and most other downtown businesses who aren't fortunate enough to have on-site parking still have the same problem. This lot can be filled almost overnight if it was re-signed for something more than 3 hours, preferably the same as the James Street lot, which is 9-hour parking, and it would serve its intended purpose, which is to get cars off the street. So I'm here very basically to ask that you look at the lot again, look at the time limits, and think about why the property was purchased in the first place, and think about re-signing the time limits. Questions or comments, Alderman Brown?
You
said your memory's better than mine.
I think his memory's better than mine.
My memory's better than yours?
Well, you remember a lot more of the details of this than I did.
At my age, I've forgotten more than you remember. That doesn't prove I remember anything. It's certainly true that the Joint Parking Committee spent a lot of time considering the difference between employee parking and parking for customers. Certainly the Siegel lot, that was a major factor. The lot behind post office is a lot that was assembled from various pieces, and there's various kinds of time limits in there, as I understand it. And certainly the Siegel lot is one that, now, at the time, I remember we were more interested in just acquiring the Natalini property, and indeed there were discussions what we would do if we could get it and when it would become available. It was a very long-term investment by the city, which I think was one of the smarter things the city did over a decade ago. As you point out, it was a long time ago we made that decision to basically we purchased right of first refusal, as I think what we did then. And but I think, you know, we're talking, you know, the 21st century. I think what everyone should do on this council, not just the people, I'm not even the alderman for that ward, I think we should consider what indeed, and I think your input in terms of noticing how many cars are currently parking there is important. It's also true that some of the public might eventually discover it. There's also other possibilities. Part of the lot could be posted 3 hours. Part of it could be posted 4 hours or 9 hours. But there's all sorts of possibilities. And I'm not sure the mechanism today, 12 years after that committee went out of business, what the right, we have a business committee that could consider it and give us suggestions. I would open it up to all the aldermen from that ward and the other council members. As I say, the original decision was, it was actually probably at least 15 years ago when we first, the opportunity arose and we realized that this was an opportunity we should jump on independent of what the future might bring. And the future is here, and I think we should consider the today. What indeed is the parking situation downtown in terms of employees versus guests and customers, which are, of course, our first concern. I would yield to anyone else who wants to address it. Mr. Belabra?
So he invited me to weigh in. I'll weigh in. So I joined the council 12 years ago, just as the Joint Parking Committee was being disbanded or done away with or whatever happened to it. And as long as I've been on the council, we've talked about this lot as being a lot for shoppers. So if there was a decision by the Joint Parking Committee, it was not memorialized in any way that I'm aware of. Secondly, this lot won't provide parking for all employees. So yeah, we could make it an employee-only lot, and it would serve some employees, but we would still have some employees who have to move their car all the time. So I don't really see that solving the problem of employees having to move their cars. And lastly, the way that it was financed, it was financed by the general fund, so all taxpayers in town paid for the lot. And so I think all taxpayers in town need to be able to use it. So if I thought there were 38 spaces and there were 38 employees on 3rd Street and we could safely, you know, tuck them all away and never have to worry about it, that would be one thing. But because there will always be some fairly significant number of employees parking on the street, it doesn't really solve a problem from my perspective to go the other way. So that's my take on it right now. But as we do with parking all the time, I think that it needs to be continually evaluated and reevaluated. We've talked multiple times. I know Dick Gunch has heard this. You know, what is our inventory? You took some shots on of that lot on the middle of a day without accompanying shots of 3rd Street at the same time on the same day. Maybe it was just a dead day in town. I don't know. I have no idea what the usage of that lot was compared to the usage on 3rd Street or anywhere else in town. So I would like, at different times, a complete, thorough inventory of our parking, scientifically done, and that helps us make decisions about how to tweak and move the dials and change the time restrictions.
If I may add one more thing, Mr. Mayor. When we first considered that lot, we had thought we would be able to engineer a lot that went all the way from James through. Now, unfortunately, for various reasons, the city couldn't quite pull that off. James is obviously a much more highly trafficked side street than Hamilton is. Hamilton? No.
Campbell.
Hamilton's in my ward. So if we'd been able to go through to James, I think there would have been a lot more public traffic into it because that's a much more highly traveled side street. So going through to Campbell, I think it's going to require time for out-of-town visitors, and we have many out-of-town visitors. Thank God we welcome them in town who do return. And it'll take a while for some of those out-of-town visitors to discover this lot. So, again, I think we should watch it a little bit and maybe take some kind of account and find out what's going on. The winter is probably not the good time for out-of-town visitors to be discovering a new lot in town. So, as I say, a number of things have changed since we originally thought about what we were going to do to that lot. So I would hope that we can put a little effort into finding out some of the numbers that you and I agree we probably ought to know at this point, 15 years later. Thank you.
I would like to ask Mrs. McKittrick to provide all of us present this evening and those tuning in a little bit of background with respect to how this lot came to be, the process that took place, and, of course, where we stand today. Mike and I corresponded via email regarding this as well, but I think for those particularly joining us, because the council did receive a summary from the city administrator, but if you could just expound on that, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, there was an agreement that was entered into several years ago with the Nottolinis and the city for first right of refusal, so that if and when that property became available, the intended use was to turn it into a parking lot. I've been with the city for 14 years. Our director of community development, Dick Gunch, has been with the city for 14 years. I spoke with him about his knowledge of the history of that property. I also asked Alan DeVita, our economic development director, to do some research and to go back and look through joint parking committee minutes to see if she could find anything. Neither Dick could recall any specific discussion about that particular property being designated only for employee parking, and Ellen could not find any minutes confirming that that was in any discussion. In 2009, I was notified that that property was available for sale. And I went to the council and asked for permission to close on the property. And we had allocated about $150,000, I think it was $152,000, in the SSA 1 fund specifically for that. And it had been put aside for several years. At the time, I proposed to the council that we purchase that property They gave me permission to do that, and at the same time, it was my perception that it was always going to be for the public. It was always going to be for shoppers, and that's the way I presented it to the council when I asked them permission to close on the property, and no one corrected my perception of it at that time. We also had to go through a rezoning process from B3 to B2, and we went before the Plan Commission, and it was presented to the Plan Commission that this was a public parking lot to change the zoning. I also had to appear before the Historic Preservation Commission because we were looking to either, A, have the property or have the structure moved if someone would purchase it, or B, if they didn't purchase it, to have it demolished, which was the actual end result. But during that conversation, I stood before the Historic Preservation Commission and proposed that it was a lot for shoppers, that it was a public parking lot. And we did get permission eventually for a demolition because we didn't get any bids on moving the structure, unfortunately. The parking lot was constructed with general fund monies because there was no money in the SSA1 to construct it. And again, it wasn't limited just to employee parking in SSA1. It was for the public. And so we felt that that was appropriate to propose that to the city council. Dan Dengis, the public works director, and I had a discussion on the signage for the lot once it was constructed. And again, because it had always been the intent, as far as we knew and as far as the council knew, for it to be public parking, we concluded that we would install 3-hour limit parking, as most of the other parking lots are for that type of parking. Then we had the opportunity to acquire from Mr. Simon a parcel of land between the History Center and his building, and also come to an agreement with the History Center for use of their property. And I'm talking specifically about the alleyway between his building and the History Center. And the purpose of acquiring use or acquiring the property itself was to connect shoppers from 3rd Street to the public parking lot. At the same time, I came before you a couple of weeks ago and presented the budget. And in that presentation, I presented that we would be looking to expend funds to upgrade that alley and make it a pedestrian mall. But it was, again, for the purpose of connecting the shoppers on 3rd Street to the public parking lot on Campbell Street. We have not yet installed off-site signage. It has been wintertime, and we've been talking about where to locate the signage and intend to do that on 3rd Street, directing shoppers to this parking lot. At the same time, we have not advertised anywhere else. We haven't even updated our map. Ellen brought to my attention today that our parking lot map on the city website has not been updated to even include this. So I think Mike is absolutely correct. The public doesn't know that this lot is available. However, the construction was only finished 4 months ago. So it really hasn't been through all of the seasons yet, particularly the better seasons when we have more shoppers, more visitors in town, to really test the waters. And again, just to emphasize, had the intent been for this to be partially or in whole an employee parking lot, I would not have proposed in the budget to expend funds for this pedestrian mall for the connection. And I'm certain that I would not have recommended and worked with Dan to acquire use of that alleyway for a pedestrian mall, because again, the main purpose was to connect shoppers and make it easy for them to get from 3rd Street back to this public parking lot. So my recommendation would be that we give it a chance, that we monitor it, for a year so that it can go through all of the seasons. It's been through the winter. It hasn't been through the spring, summer, or fall. And I think that the fair thing to do would be to monitor it for three more seasons, and especially after we have an opportunity to get directional signage up, to update our map on the website, and maybe get the word out a little bit that this is available for shoppers. And then look next year, a year from now, and say, okay, how is it doing? Is anyone using it? Or if it's still sitting empty, then consider this suggestion. Thank you.
Anyone else on the dais? Comments or questions? Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The question that I have is, what would be the time limits for public parking in that lot? Is that 3 hours as it is in other locations?
Yes.
So that would be 3 hours of parking.
That's what it currently is, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Alderman Kilberg.
I think it's great that Mr. Simons recognizes it's being underutilized. And I think that one way that you could spur utilization is if you'd extend the hours. And I think if you'd extend that to 8 hours, all of a sudden that lot would certainly get discovered in a hurry. And I guess I would be inclined to give that some consideration. I guess I would like to see maybe over the course of the next 60 days some type of a study to see what the occupancy actually is as we get into some warmer weather and so on. But after I'd have an opportunity to see those numbers, I guess I would be open. If, in fact, it's not being utilized, if it's underutilized by the end of May, then I think what we need to do is probably need to do something to stimulate activity and utilization of that lot, and an 8-hour time limit would certainly do that, I think. I guess I would be interested in where the chamber is on this issue and if they were they would speak in favor of what you're suggesting, Mr. Simon.
I can't speak for the chamber. I don't know if
I guess I would be interested in what their opinion is as it relates to this topic.
Gene, forgive me for requesting, but could you join us at the podium? Thank you very much.
Gene Gaines, Geneva Chamber of Commerce. Of course, I'm older, longer in this job than some of you, so I do remember the conversation that this would be a public or an employee parking problem. But it really doesn't matter what we remember from 15, 16 years ago. What we have to acknowledge is that we do have an employee parking problem. And whether it's this lot or some other lot, eventually we're going to have to address that problem. Because as the economy improves, we'll have more parking problems, which Paul Dakota always said is a wonderful problem to have. So as we fill the streets with customers' cars, we're going to have to put employees somewhere. So as you plan forward, we need to address that. We can go either way with 8 hours. We'll definitely make it an employee lot.
Well, what that would do, though, that would move cars off of 3rd Street and into that lot, and that would certainly open up parking spaces on 3rd Street then, wouldn't it?
Exactly, and that is what Mr. Simon's recommending, is that you open
it. I mean, is that a logical explanation?
It is. It is.
Thank you.
Gene, forgive me for putting you on the spot, but in the world that is the Rubik's Cube of downtown parking, if it's signed 8 hours, don't we run the risk of our friends who take the Metra utilizing that space as well?
Well, I think what they've done in the past is start those 8-hour lots at 8:30, thinking that most commuters will already have been on the train. But you always have that problem with commuters. Sure. Infiltrating our parking.
I wanted to make that point, Mr. Mayor. There's really no difference between customer parking and employee parking. What we have is some mostly 3-hour spots in our city parking lots. But some of our city parking lots that were built at city expense, both Siegel's and one behind the post office, have 9-hour, I believe it's 9-hour parking starting at 8:30. And it was the 8:30 time that was put in place to discourage. These are all public parking lots. Mm-hmm. Whether we think in our mind there's this subtle distinction is irrelevant. It's what's on the sign that counts. And indeed, it's true that some people that are going into Chicago for a day to catch the 10:37 train or the 11:37 train know about the spots, which are 9-hour spots. My wife is one of them. But really, there is the question is only what we sign it, and there's no reason that 3 and 9 are our only possibilities. I mean, that was something that was that decision to go with 3 hours and or the 9 hours starting at 8:30 was made a decade and a half ago. That is another question that could be opened up again if we dare.
It's always a challenge to find the right hours because you have many people who would like to turn people over every 15 minutes to a half hour. You want someone who's going to shop for a long period to have 3 to 4 hours. So there's no magic number.
Mr. Miller?
Yeah, and the fact that there's no magic number is why I favor that we continually monitor, we continually get the parking inventory so that we can fine-tune. To Alderman Kilberg's point, I think the question is less a question of utilization. If there is huge demand for spaces on 3rd Street and those spaces don't exist, then people will find the lot, especially if we'll put signs up and things like that. The fact that the lot is empty to me means that demand isn't there right now. It's only been 4 months anyway. We have to see how it comes out when the weather warms up and things like that. The question is, of our limited number of spaces, how many do we want to allocate to 8 hours or longer? And I don't know that we've ever come up with an answer for that. This lot is off 3rd Street, but with signage, shoppers will be able to find it. It's no further from 3rd Street, really, than a space right on 3rd. So if they're parking there, I don't see much difference between that and a space right on 3rd. If you're parked up at 3rd and James and you're shopping way down by the train tracks, you've got a fairly long walk anyway. So the question has always been, how many of our spaces do we want to allocate to long-term parking?
From the dais, anyone else?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Oh, please do.
Michael, if I remember going back 16 years ago, I believe I served on that joint parking committee. And I do recall, as Ms. Gaines indicated, that there were some concerns about parking for employees and possibly we should look in that direction. I don't remember if we've taken any specific stand on the issue as such, but wasn't Tim Vitaine a chair of that committee?
He was for a time.
I'm wondering if he might shed some light on a direction that possibly you're suggesting.
I was chair when this decision was made. It was either Tim or myself. It was either me or Tim that was chair at the time.
Was it you or Tim? Huh?
Yeah, and I can't remember which. We were both chair at various times.
Yeah. Well, just a suggestion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Flanagan, then Kilberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The fact that the minutes don't reflect that, I guess maybe it was an off-sided comment or something, or maybe something that was in the eyes of the beholder or whatever they say. So one never knows if it was an official authorization. But I think that Ms. McKittrick's suggestion about actually looking at it over a long period of time to find out whether that parking, however it goes, whichever way it goes, also addresses the concern that Alderman Maladra has. So I would support waiting and looking at it over at least 3 seasons to see where it's going. That's my druthers. So.
Alderman Kilberg?
I'd like the staff to take a look at occupancy over the next 60 days. You know, if we extend the hours and whoever gets there first gets to park there, that's going to be a more popular location and it's going to attract parking. And I think that's what we're trying to get accomplished here. And if we, if staff would take a look and provide the city or with the council with data, we can make a more informed decision, I think, at that point in time. So I guess that's my suggestion at this point, that we collect some data, see what the actual utilization level is here during April and May, and then try to take some action that's predicated on data rather than wait and see.
Alderman Vogelsberg?
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I have worked downtown, been an employee, and quite a big shopper. And I definitely agree there is a problem with employee parking, no doubt about it. The courthouse is there, and it's great, except I think on Mondays it's almost gone. So I agree that there's a need for employee parking. But then when I think back to when I worked at a mall, the employees had to park way off so the shoppers could park. And even though I believe there is a huge need for employee parking, to me, this lot is premium real estate. So to me, it's like right up front. You're parking right on 3rd Street. You're just a little bit behind. So I would recommend we wait a year, especially because of the way the funds are allocated. It's not just a simple signage problem. It is how we funded the parking lot. But when we go further in the perimeter, I'd like to look at more 9-hour parking as well, because there is an employee parking problem. But that just seems like a great location. And I've been involved in all these proceedings, and really, I forgot it was back there, because it's not, it hasn't been signed. So I'm not surprised no one really knows about it, but it will, well, they'll know now. But it will get some pickup, I think. I really do. The weekends are just starting in the spring, so I would like to agree with Alderman Flanagan and wait a year.
Anyone else from the dais? Alderman Hill?
Excuse me. I would like to suggest that if we do measure the parking by the general public, that we include the month of June also. So it would be a 90-day wait period to really see what's happening, because June includes Swedish days, which is probably one of the days where we have the greatest desire for off-street or street parking. And I'm not sure waiting a year is going to make much of a change. I think that we could make a pretty intelligent decision after we would wait 3 months, as long as there is some signage indicating that there's parking. But then the question is, we have to answer, is what are the hours going to be? Is it going to be 3-hour parking in that lot? Is it going to be 9-hour, 5-hour, or what have you? And I'm wondering if we should really be making that decision tonight.
Well, the current ordinance reads 3 hours.
Right.
It would require an ordinance change. It would require, I believe, a public hearing.
No.
It would not. Just a simple ordinance change via committee of the whole, then back to the council with input from whomever would like to comment, of course. But, yeah, I mean, Chuck and I served on the erstwhile Joint Parking Committee, and just for clarification, it wasn't disbanded or dissolved. It was actually morphed into the committee of the whole structure, quite frankly. But you're right. It was this constant, and I'll use the phrase again, Rubik's Cube of what hours, how long. And we saw 15-minute spots popping up here and there, particularly on corners. And the 9 hours were a concern because some folks, when I commuted downtown, I'd go on odd hours, and, God, this is great. I could park there all day. So you're right. It's sometimes a roll of the dice in terms of how long it should be, how brief it should be. It's an inconvenience to the employees. Absolutely it is. So. Yes.
Also, I don't think we've really addressed the handicap issue, too, to any great extent, either in the downtown area. So, I mean, we're going to open up a whole long discussion on parking.
Yeah, the state code dictates exactly how many handicap spots we are required to have based on the total inventory. You're right.
Two in there. And we have enough?
We have two in there.
There are currently two, and that's...
And that is sufficient?
Per statute,
wow.
Yes.
I would think there would be more. Okay.
So, I know that somebody in the audience had a hand up as well. Somebody way in the back. Oh, Ellen, come on up. I'm sorry, the light's off. I can't quite see that far. I almost called you Chris Aston. I would have been never lived that down, for God's sake. You imagine? And he was present at the time.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ellen DeVita, City of Geneva. I just want to make a few observations. I think that the first thing that would happen were we to change the parking spaces is that the employees would move from 2nd Street one row closer. And personally, I believe that we should wait. We need to go through one festival season, and the lot will be found. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the festival season. It's going to take the alley being done. It's going to take the signage. And those things will lead to the demand, and the consumers will know that they're there. As Mary noted, I spent half a day looking through old minutes because we don't have a central archive system. And the closest I got was a Geneva Business Committee meeting on March 2007. Aldermen Vogelsberg and Maladra were there, and it was a long discussion. There was a request to change the parking time limits in the James Street lot south of Nash Restaurant. And throughout the minutes, the term 9 hour is used for employee and 3 hour for public. And Steve Burnham asked Aston about the city's interest in securing public parking. So I take that to be 9 hour for a limited time, amount of time in the immediate area while waiting to construct a parking lot on the Notolini property obtained by the city more than 10 years ago. So at that point, the conversation to me in this, and I'll pass it around, it appears that there was consideration at that point that it was going to be public parking at the 9 hour level, because all the way through the minutes, there's a discussion. There were quite a few votes and revotes taken too on this particular. And one of the upshots of it was that that Second Street was changed to 9 hour for employee parking. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that happened at this meeting to try and accommodate the employee needs. And then in terms of the 14 hour, I just want to say it took Mrs. Notolini that long to die. She had quite a lot of life left in her. So it's one of the reasons the project took so long. So bless her soul, that's when she passed. Okay.
Anyone else wish to comment on this matter? Mr. Mayor. Before I recognize the city administrator again. Mary? Oh, Mike, do you want to
close a comment?
Go ahead, sure, of course.
The thing that I think is most important is that we have a parking lot that's empty that we all want filled. Doesn't matter who it's filled with, as long as we get it filled. The rule for most downtown businesses that don't have on-site parking, the owners will tell their employees, don't park in front of our store, which means for the most part, they'll park in front of somebody else's store. And that's why you have the Rubik's Cube that Kevin's talking about. If we were to give the employees an option that's viable, that frees up more spaces that are prime spaces in front of somebody else's store for shoppers. I'd like to propose a counter proposal to Ms. McKittrick's, which is temporarily re-sign part of this lot for 9 hour. It's not employee, it's 9 hour. It's public parking, but it's 9 hour. And you will get people to use it. You won't have the empty real estate, because none of us want empty real estate. And then continue to do your study. But in the meantime, you're going to get some cars off of State Street, off of 3rd Street, and you're going to free up spaces for shoppers in the process.
Mrs. McKittrick?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was just going to suggest that that we monitor the lot through the next few seasons to give it an opportunity to be used after signage is put up, after we change the maps that we have online, after we install the signage, and then for, you know, perhaps 90 to 120 days after that, that we start monitoring it. I don't think it's going to do much good to start monitoring it tomorrow if we haven't put the signs up yet. So I would like to see the difference, and I do suspect that once we put up directional signs and advertise that it is available for public parking, because as I said, it's only been open for 4 months, and I don't think anyone knows about it yet. I think once they know about it, it will be used. But if you do change the signage to more than the 3 hours that it's currently signed, it will be filled up with employee parking, and the shoppers really won't have a chance to use it. So as a compromise, I would say, you know, let's look at it for 90 to 120 days after the directional signage goes up and monitor it and keep track of, at least on a weekly or biweekly basis, of the number of spaces that are being used, and then come back in 3 to 4 months with that data for the council to make a decision upon.
Your comments beg the question, when do we anticipate the signage to be erected? Ergo, Dan Dinges, the man in black, answer the question.
We hope to get the signs in the next week or two. We were actually looking at it today to see where they can go and how many we need to do, but I would say within a couple weeks.
Mr. Alderman Singer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. A question, Mr. McKittrich. We're going to expend a considerable sum of money in improving that facility with the intention that it was to be used for public parking. If we move in that different direction as what's being suggested here, what's the outcome?
You're talking about the alleyway.
Yes.
Correct. Well, it would be, you know, my position that if we're not going to maintain that as a public parking lot, that, and if we're going to change it to an employee parking lot, it doesn't have the use that was originally intended. Can it be used as a pedestrian mall? Yes. But it will be a dead-end pedestrian mall for the most part. It won't be a transport from 3rd Street to the parking lot. And that was one way we were hoping to
yes.
move people. So I guess it would be my suggestion is if that turns into an employee parking lot, that we not spend the money on that alleyway to turn it into a pedestrian mall, that we expend those funds somewhere else.
Okay. I concur.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Clarification, we're using the terms public parking lot and an employee parking lot. I thought it was a public parking lot, and that if you had a nine-hour parking, anyone could park in there that was there first.
Traditionally, when there's been 8 to 9 hour parking signage put up, the city has thought of that as employee parking because that's what they need, is 8 to 9 hour parking spaces. So that's the reasoning for the shorter time periods. The three hour parking signage is typically done when we're trying to accommodate shoppers. When we're trying to accommodate employees, it's 8 to 9 hour signage.
But the parking lot would still be a public parking lot, and then if someone was there at 8:30 or 9 o'clock and wanted to park there, they could park their 8 or 9 hours, whatever was designated. Is that right?
Sir, they wouldn't turn over like every 3 hours as they would with shoppers.
Some people that want to be there for 4 hours to go to a restaurant, and that they're going to come and they're going to leave in four and a half, 5 hours. I mean,
or someone who
public,
has a,
public is public.
Public,
right?
Yeah, someone who has a court date, for example, right. Could very well find that spot if the sure. what have you. Yeah, someone is attending an exhibit at the History Center, or perhaps a what have you. So.
This is a distinction without a difference. Mm-hmm. I can assure you, the parking committee talked for many, 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 many hours over time limits: 2 hours, 4 hours, 3 hours, 9 hours. In the end, if you're driving a car with a valid license plate, it's a parking lot. You don't know which fund paid for it. All you know is what's on the sign, and what's on the sign is by ordinance. It's the law. Mm-hmm. So it's a distinction without a difference, but it, as Mary has correctly pointed out, it really makes a difference in terms of the usage of the law.
In other words, you wouldn't need to have a sticker if you're an employee and you're going to get a sticker.
The people who live
there.
In Geneva or commute via the Geneva train station know where the nine-hour spots are,
yeah.
and they but know what the time limits are. Yeah. The visitors who come into town are very upset with three. Typically, they'll say, you know, if I come to town and I want to have lunch at Mr. Simon's wonderful little traveler, 3 hours isn't enough. And so the three was a very unhappy compromise between a lot of different suggestions. And it survived 10 years, so maybe it wasn't so bad a compromise, but it's not necessarily the ultimate answer. And anybody who has a better suggestion should come forward.
And I think, for the record, it's now the big traveler, not the little traveler.
Yes. And it doesn't take 3 hours to eat lunch. The service is quite good.
If I may, so now we've fallen a little bit down the slippery slope of trying to solve Geneva's parking problem, which we're not going to do in an evening. So my characterization of the situation is this, that this council over the last 18 months has created a product. That product is a parking lot with three-hour time limits. That product is currently underutilized, but it's also unadvertised, unpackaged, unrepresented. In my mind, it's an incomplete product. It's premature to say that the product that we intended does not meet its stated purpose. Let's package it, market it, get through a festival. I like the idea of getting through mm-hmm. Swedish Days, and then see if the product has any legs. Reevaluate it at that point. So, Mary, I think that your idea of reevaluating it over a period of decades is a little too long. I cartoon it a little bit.
Did I say decades?
Well, I don't know. That's the way it seemed to me. I think that's a little bit too long. I think 60 days is a little bit too short. So if we take a look at it, let's say at the end of July, and see how things went through Swedish Days, see how things have upticked once people start to get the word about it, then we'll have a good idea about whether or not this product that we created has any momentum. Does that sound good?
I think that that's fair.
Well, you gave up on that decades thing, really.
It's like decades.
Just for clarification, no action can be taken this evening since it was not posted on the agenda. However, if someone is willing to make a recommendation with respect to direction, that direction can be accepted by the professional staff for a more fulsome recommendation for action on April 8th.
Signs going up for 3 hours as soon as possible?
Per ordinance.
What I heard from Mr. Dinges?
They're already up.
Yeah, they're up.
Oh, they're up.
It's the directional signs saying.
Oh, the directional signs. Fine. I agree with Alderman Maladra. Let's see what happens.
I think the chamber has essentially concurred with Mr. Simon, and I'm just saying I think 90 days, that's what the majority of the council would like to do with it, let's take a look at the data, and then we can make a lot more informed decision after 90 days than we can tonight.
Is everyone comfortable with that synopsis by Alderman Gilbert?
Are you saying 100? Is it 90 or 120?
I don't know.
I like what Ellen said about the whole festival season because it's not just Swedish Days. I mean, we have a lot of stuff going on in the fall. I think we need to go through a more cycle.
I agree.
I think we all know it's going to be filled every festival.
Right.
But the question is, what happens after the festivals? Once people know it's there, then what happens? That's the behavior we have to get at.
Why don't we recommend to Ms. DeVita to come back with two suggestions. Sound good, Ellen? Either 9 decades or 90 days. 90 days, 120 days, what have you. So just something we can actually vote on. I know it was obviously well received, the lot was during the Christmas walk of 2012 and thereabouts. I mean, and I know that folks who headed downtown for the Candy Cane event discovered it, knew it because of the previous event, and I mean, the locals know it. You're right, but we're not always catering to the locals. So.
Can I add a comment?
No. Yes, of course.
I just want to say we're grateful for any new parking, whether it's employees or whether it's for customers. We want more customers to come. We'd just like you to keep in mind as we move forward, any opportunities to provide employee parking would be very important. Thank you.
Thank you. Ellen, are you comfortable with that?
I don't expect to be here in 9 decades. What are you telling me to do?
How about next Monday? April 8th is a cow meeting.
Well, I think we should take at least 90 days and start driving through and keep a log.
But I would like to have it memorialized, to borrow Mr. Maladra's phrase, so as in time we all don't remember exactly what was discussed. Can we memorialize something next Monday, April 8th?
Okay, then I'm not clear. What are you asking me to write something up
to
because this was just a policy?
To ratify that the direction achieved by the council is a 90 or 120-day review and then revisit the issue, whether it be hourly signage that has to change.
I think something that I should bring forward.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I've just closed on the property.
Fair enough. Ellen
and I'm thinking
Mary
it's
going to
be in the minutes also. So.
Ellen and Mary will work together, so. I think so, too. Does anyone object to that direction? Alderman Hill, Cummings?
I have a question about the timing, however, 90 days or 120. Does that take us into the Court of Elegance? Is that the last festival type of an event we?
No, that's August, and then Festival of the Vine is September.
Festival of the Vine, okay.
We have the art show.
Shouldn't we go at least to the Festival of the Vine into September for this initial study?
We'll let Mary McKittrick and the others hash out those details for our consideration next week. How's that?
Fine.
I'd like to go on record supporting Alderman Hill's suggestion.
Mr. Simon, anything else you'd like to?
Don Cummings.
Mr. Cummings?
I just want to make sure that the clock starts ticking after the signage is up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then I think we have a real picture of the product, so to speak, which I think is a good way of putting it.
Maps.
Mm-hmm. So noted. Good idea. And the signage does include a resemblance of you. So well, yes, painting. So.
Perfect.
Yeah. That'll bring shoppers in. Anything else on this matter?
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Alderman Marks makes a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
The committee of the whole meeting is adjourned. The city council will convene in approximately 1 minute. Ladies and gentlemen, as soon as our members of the city council are seated, we will begin the city council meeting. This is, again, a regularly scheduled city council meeting. We kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Don Cummings.
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Dean Spielberg.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
John Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
We begin our city council meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I believe there is no more appropriate person or persons to lead us than the Buchanans. Would you be so kind as to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you both. You were on TV, by the way. You know this is being broadcast live.
To millions.
Good for you.
That's true, actually.
We warned them.
Did you warn them? Look at this, folks. We jump down to item number four, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening from any member of the city council? Does anyone in the audience wish to amend the agenda? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. These items are considered to be routine by the city council and can be enacted with one motion unless a member of the city council wishes to remove an item and or a member of the audience wishes to remove an item for more information.
So move.
There's a motion by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Hill to approve the omnibus agenda as presented. Any questions or comments? Mr. Landberg, City Clerk Extraordinaire, please take the roll.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Don Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Don Cummings?
Aye.
According to my notes, folks, we jump down to item 10, municipal bills for payment. We ask our city clerk to please read the bills for consideration.
Bills for payment total $405,667.71.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read. The invoices that add up to that total can be found on the city's website in the council's packet for tonight.
Motion by Alderman Brown is offered to pay the bills as read and available on the city's website and in our packets. That motion is seconded by Alderman Vogelsberg. Any questions or comments from anyone? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Don Cummings?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We jump down to Committee of the Whole Business. Item 11A is to consider approval of Ordinance Number 2013-11, amending Title 4, Chapter 2, Section 13, License Fees and Number, adding one Class C2 liquor license for the Geneva Wine Cellars and Tasting Room, LLC.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Singer, enthusiastically seconded by Alderman Marks, who's more of a beer guy, apparently. Questions or comments for the Buchanans? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Dean Kilberg?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Don Cummings?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Folks, we jump down to item 13, new business. Anyone from the audience, any new business this evening? Anything to discuss, present? Mr. Dinges, you look like you're ready to pounce. We all know why Mr. Dinges is with us this evening.
Good evening. Tonight I'm going to talk about solid waste contracts.
That was pretty haunting.
As you guys all know, our current contract for solid waste with Allied, now called Republic, expires at the end of June. So we went out to bid. We worked with Batavia and St. Charles starting back in fall of last year, see if it made sense to do a joint bidding process. During that process, St. Charles was in the middle of a contract. They had their contract, I believe, their three-year contract ends at the end of June, but they have an option for two additional years. They chose to go with the two additional years. So they kind of withdrew from putting it out to bid with us. So Batavia and I worked together to put specs together. During that process, we talked to other communities and to the waste haulers to find out, does it make sense to do a joint bid or have bids at the same time but separate contracts? What we learned is there's several municipalities that have tried the joint bid process. And ultimately, at least in a couple of the instances that we heard from some of the waste haulers and communities, they bid it together, but then they ended up going their own way and awarding to different haulers. And talking to the waste haulers, it sounded like to really make it economical for them and for the cities, they would have to be identical contracts. So all three communities or both communities would have to select what type of method they want, make it the same for all three communities so it looks like one community, then we would see a benefit. If they have to change for each community, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. So based on that, we ended up doing similar to what we did with the mosquito contract. We put specs together for Batavia and for Geneva that look very, very close. They have a few little modifications. We have a few. But the specs are the same. We bid them at the same time, so we had economies of scale as far as that goes. And then we opened bids here in Geneva. And we opened bids on March 27th, and we received bids from five waste haulers. In front of you, I gave a lot of spreadsheets. The first two pages are essentially the bids that we received summarized. I don't expect you to look at that. The last two pages are the ones that I've summarized as being the low bids.
So the colored ones.
Colored ones, correct. When we bid it, we bid for three options. Option one, which would be that orange color in the upper left corner, is essentially our current program. It's a sticker program or pay per bag. So for every can or bag that you put out the curb, you put a sticker on it, and the hauler takes it away. We also included, you'll see, yard waste sticker ended up being the same as the waste, so it'd be one sticker for either item. We have a half refuse bag, which is a 20-gallon bag. For year one, I'm reading, $165. And then all the items below are options that would be available to the residents. So you can see there's different sizes, 35, 65, 95-gallon toters. That's the big container that you see at the curb. That would be supplied by the hauler. So they would have the option to choose either or. They could choose recycling, and they could choose refuse or recycling. We also added an option for yard waste, which we hadn't offered before, but based on our discussions with the communities and with Batavia and that, we thought let's get a price on people to be able to have a tote for yard waste. And then the white goods is your refrigerators and that stuff. You'll see that Advanced Disposal Services, formerly known as Veolia, was the low bid for option number one, which is the current program. Option number two is similar to what we did the last 5 years ago when we bid it. This is the sticker program with a recycling tote being delivered to each household. So everybody would get a recycling tote, and then you would use stickers for your garbage and yard waste. You can see the price on that. The sticker price becomes $2.85 a sticker, same for yard waste. And then the half bag is $1.85.
Is it the blue bag? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, it's the senior.
Okay, thank you.
We call senior, it, I think, yep. The senior bag. It's to get rid of the senior part of it, it's just a half bag.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, you're saying you're opening it up for all the residents?
It would be opened up. It would be a half bag. Then it's the same thing below. You see that the standard 65-gallon recycling toter is no charge because that's required per the contract. The others are available for residents to choose if they'd like to go to the refuse toter or to get additional recycling toters. You see the pricing there. Again, we've got the yard waste toter and the white goods item. Again, Advanced Disposal Services, and I think there's reps from Advanced Disposal Services here and from Republic here as well tonight. And then the third option was an all totes option. So all households would get a refuse container and a recycling container. It's a monthly fee. It's a fixed fee, so everybody would pay that amount. And you can see that comes out to $15.98 a month. That's a take-all. So if they have a 95-gallon refuse container and they have two additional bags that don't fit, they could put that at the curb and everything gets taken. Again, we have optional add-ons if you wanted to have more than one recycle bin or more than one refuse container, because you generate that much waste, then you can rent for a nominal charge that would be added to your monthly fee. Again, we offer the yard waste toter and again the white goods. And again, for this base bid, Advanced Disposal Services was the low. However, on the last page, there's kind of a pink and purple option that Republic provided on the alternate proposals. First of all, the green page is where we are today. The sticker price is $3.18 a sticker. If someone wants to rent a 95-gallon refuse tote, it's $22.55 a month. The white goods item is $40. And then we call it the senior bag. It's an 18-gallon bag is $2.30 a bag. And then we also had a option for a 65-gallon recycling toter. And that's $3.85. Sorry. This is I'll go over this. This is the first option or the alternate option that Republic presented. It's actually a 10-year program. The others were 5-year. This is a 10-year program. If you look at the 10-year program for Republic versus what would be the blue option, option number 3, um, this would be kind of comparing them. One's a 5-year, one's a 10-year. On the blue option, you can see right here, I total it up. If you take the monthly fee times by 12 for each year, you come up with a total over that 5-year period is $1,063. And I showed the percent increases as you enter into years 2, 3, 4, and 5. I did the same thing for the 10-year option. And you'll see that over the first 5 years on the Republic 10-year option, the cost is actually cheaper. It's $1,050. And you can see the percent increases there. And then as you enter into years 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, I figured out the percent increases. It's 3 to 4% increases. So the total, if we went with the 10-year program, would be $2,255. It's the same program as that option 3. You'd get a recycling tote and a refuse tote, and then you have the option to add from there. There is another option that it's a modified option number 3. That is this purple option. And what this is very similar to option 3. Everybody gets the carts, recycling and refuse. However, the residents would have a choice of what size they want, and they would pay based on the size. So you can see the 35-gallon refuse tote, they actually have a senior discount option, which you can see is $13.25 right here. And then below that, if you're not a senior, you would pay $15.50. And then you got the 65-gallon refuse is $16.50. 95 is $18.50, and so on. In order to compare it, you essentially need to add the recycling. And the recycling for all three sizes is $3 a month. So you would add $3 to each one of whatever refuse tote that you choose, and that would come up with your monthly fee. The difference here is anything beyond your refuse container, your cart. If you have a bag to put on, you can see above there's a sticker price. You would put a sticker on for any additional bags, similar to yard waste. On all these options, yard waste, if you have grass to get rid of, you put a sticker on it, and it gets hauled off. I compared those numbers similar to the others, and including the recycling cart, you can see it here, the senior amount would go down to $1,024. If you were to choose the 35-gallon, it's $1,167. The 65 would be $1,231, and the 95 would be $1,358. So I guess there's a couple of decisions, or at least input, that we would like. First off, you can see the different options that are out there. We've got the program that currently exists, which is the sticker program, the sticker with the recycling cart, and then there's the tote option.
What age is it considering to be eligible for the discount?
40.
25 and above.
That's going to have to still be nailed down, because it's not specified in the contract. And ask Republic, but basically they'll check ID. You know, they would ask for IDs. I'm not sure what that age is. Is it 65 and older? I don't know.
Alderman Vogelsberg, then Alderman Maladra.
Thank you, Mayor. Dan, you and I kind of talked about this before, because I understand how much cleaner a neighborhood would be with all totes. But my problem, when I live in a cul-de-sac, it's not like I scope my neighbor's garbage, but I'm always amazed at how many people can go a week without any garbage. So it would be really hard for them, I think, to pay for a service like when the yearly, when I did just our garbage stickers now, eight something. So when they're only putting a bag out every other week, it's only 400 something. So I would have a, I would personally have a problem with all inclusive, like the blue option. Because I think for some people who travel, or I don't know, they don't have kids or they don't buy packaged goods, but they don't have a lot of garbage.
Alderman Malauder, then Alderman Brown.
I similarly have a problem with the blue option, the all-inclusive option. If I understand it correctly, it's just because there's no, so some families recycle a lot and put out very little refuse. And a family who flips it and puts out a whole ton of garbage and very little recycling would pay the same. So it doesn't, the blue option doesn't seem to encourage recycling as much as the options that we have today. Or if I understand it correctly, this sort of whatever color this option is on.
The all totes, I would say, encourages recycling because everybody's getting a big recycle bin as opposed to
But you pay the same amount whether you fill the garbage bin or fill the recycling bin. You're still having to pay a flat fee. So with the stickers, you're paying for a sticker for your garbage.
Sure.
And you're getting rid of your recycling for little or no cost. So that, I think, encourages recycling. Now, do I understand the purple one on the last page to be to have a little more of that incentive? So you pay $3 for the recycling toter. If you use more than your 35-gallon refuse toter, you have to go out and buy stickers.
Correct.
So you get somewhat penalized for excessive use.
However, if you were to just compare that, let's just say, well, if you take the if you were taking the 35-gallon refuse toter, take away the senior discount, that's $15.50. You got to add the $3, so you're at $18.50. Where in the blue option, you're paying $15.98 for both carts. So, I mean, the cheaper option there is the blue.
But in the option that we have today, the orange one on the top, what's the equivalent? So what am I paying for a 35-gallon toter?
Well, I put here, I don't know if you can see it, but on the right, I don't know what the average person uses, but you've typically got 4 weeks in a month, and I used a number of 6 stickers in a month. That's one bag per week with an occasional additional container. That's what it takes to get the toter option to be, that comes out to $16.20 a month versus $15.98. So that's kind of where you're at. If you're using 5 or less stickers, then probably the option with the sticker option is. But if you're using 6 or more, it makes more sense to go to the tote.
And when I think of my whole neighborhood, 6, that's a lot of garbage. I don't think people generate that much because of the recycling.
Right.
Alderman Brown, Alderman Flanagan, and Alderman Cummings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to get this back to a little simpler level. I, like many 1- and 2-person families whose kids have left home, maybe 55 and older often, have an old-fashioned 2-foot diameter, 3-foot tall round garbage can. I don't see that on the list anywhere. What do I do with my garbage can? Will they pick it up and empty it?
Put a sticker on it.
If we stay with the sticker program, you put a sticker on it.
Under
if you go
these
to a
program,
toter, you would get rid of your toter, and they would deliver you a brand new one.
They will deliver me a toter, but I have to pay for it, though.
Well, you're going to pay a monthly fee to have your waste and recycling hauled away.
And I'll get the toter.
The toter's delivered. Basically, the way this program, the blue option, is the toter. It's based on a 65-gallon of each, recycling and refuse. You get a one-time, residents can have a one-time, the initial, that they want a 35-gallon, or no, they'd rather have a 95-gallon.
Well, I have a problem with that because I've just recently bought my nice garbage can. It's shiny new. I'm looking for it to last another 10 years. And in the winter, I only put it out typically once every 2 weeks because my wife and I recycle and we don't consume a lot of wrapped goods. And in the summer, we put out a once a week because you worry about odors. And under this program, I lose big time. It seems I have to first pay for a toter that I don't want. And second, I can't, I'm paying for garbage pickups that I don't need. And this doesn't encourage, I worry that it's not encouraging, like Alderman Mulatter, there's nothing in here that encourages recycling, encourages people to cut down on the amount of garbage. I can't understand why the companies want to charge the same for a 95-gallon toter as they do for 35. That makes no sense to me. They're telling us that the cost of picking up the garbage is all the overhead and there's no actual cost of the actual triple the weight of garbage. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I don't know how this has been structured such that people that I think are profligate are being charged the same amount as I am.
If you're filling up the truck quicker, you're making more trips between...
If you're filling it quicker, you're making more trips. The whole thing doesn't make a lot of economic sense to me, especially in my position where, as I say, I have my nice brand-new little garbage can, and in the winter I put it out once every 2 weeks, even though it's not full typically, and I do a lot of recycling. So what's in this for me? Can you give me some reason why I might vote for either one of these?
That's up to you.
Exactly. All I did is got various options based on discussions we had, and I'm asking for input. So I will say that as far as, you know, I've heard a lot about we need to encourage recycling. I think we've been doing that a lot for many, many years, and I don't know that the encouragement is necessary. Yes, we want to encourage recycling, but as far as make them only pay for refuse and that will make them recycle more, I don't know that that's there anymore. The kids are pushing it at schools. Kids do it. Everybody does recycling now. So I don't know that that's an ultimate reason to stay with the sticker program because we need to encourage recycling. I don't know that that's because you're giving them a container that's
you'll get a chance to
much bigger to throw recycling. For as much recycling as possible. A 65-gallon tote is a lot of recycling.
Right, but then it comes down to, am I generating 65 gallons of garbage?
Right. Yeah.
Well, hold on, folks. Alderman Brown still has the floor, then Flanagan, then Cummings, then Kilberg. So, Alderman Brown?
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was just trying to figure out that, just to clarify, that the recycling toter is going to be charged throughout the whole on all of these options?
I'll go through it again.
Recycling toter is going to be
option
charged.
Number one is exact program that we have right now.
So it
stickers.
Doesn't.
You put out your little bin and recycling gets picked up.
But are
if
we,
you
are,
want, real quick, if you want to rent a recycling toter, the price is there for those that want to. And we've got several. I can give you another. We got roughly 500 people right now that are renting a recycling toter. I assume they would stay that route. We've got roughly 1,850 households that are renting refuse toters right now. I assume they will continue. So it's a matter of preference. I'm trying to get feedback. I'm getting a lot of it. and I'd like to rule out some. If the toter program is out, then let's throw it out and decide which sticker program we want to go with.
The discussion tonight is intended to be freewheeling.
Right.
So it's good. I don't know why the heck you're here, Dan, for God's sake. Alderman Flanagan still has the floor.
Thank you. That recycling toter that you're saying we currently have in place, I don't remember paying $1.20 for it.
You're not paying. Right now you've got the recycle bin that's sold at Public Works.
Okay,
that
fine.
Would be the orange option,
okay.
Option number one.
That's what I wanted to clarify in my head.
If you wanted to rent, then you would rent based on the price.
We would have to rent if we go to this program.
No.
No.
You would only rent if you went to option two. Everybody gets a recycling tote, and then your sticker price is $285 versus $270. If you go to the all totes, that means everybody's getting a container for refuse and recycling. That's the blue and the other color
the purple,
option.
Whatever. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alderman Cummings, then Kilberg.
So that I can compare sizes, how many gallons is this little tube, this blue thing I have that we fill
the
with cans
bin,
and bottles?
That's like a 20.
Right around 20 gallon, I believe.
Okay. We put three of those out a week. We put our garbage out once a month, except in the summer, maybe a little more.
Do you throw it on Eagle Brook course?
We just put it in the neighbor's yard. It works out really well.
That's awesome.
So option number two is a no bin option. Bin meaning the little.
Right, that one you would get a 65-gallon tote for recycling.
So then my question is, what happens to all these bins if we go to a tote option? What happens to our garbage cans? What do we do with the old ones? Do the stickers expire? I've got a drawer full of stickers I just bought.
Those expire June 30th, so use them up.
I'll buy them half off for
thanks. Anything else you can do? Well, now we have a market. All right, so if we went to one of the no-bin, tote-only options, we would be getting rid of, everyone in town would be getting rid of garbage cans and all their
They could choose to do the, yes.
If we went to a no-bin option and a no... Oh, because the bin, the tote option also includes stickers.
Mm-hmm. No.
So there is a possibility.
You could go to all totes and no... you'd still have, no matter what, you're going to have a yard waste sticker.
Right.
Okay.
Whether you go to totes or not. You need to get rid of your grass, you're going to have to put a sticker on that.
Brown bags?
Brown bag, right. Yep.
Okay.
As far as the bins and the garbage cans that everybody have, you can recycle them. You would be disposing of them, or you might have another use. I don't, The recycle bins are useful for other things.
Does a 55-gallon plastic garbage can fit in a 35-gallon refuse toter?
Not quite.
Why are you using a refuse toter?
Or a recycling toter?
Because you could recycle it.
So we got to recycle.
They would. Well, they would take. I mean, initially, if people are getting rid of those, the waste haulers are going to take those initial. Containers, because they're swapping to their containers.
Yeah. I too would like to see something that continues. I think it's been a good path that we've been on, continues to encourage people to recycle. It would be unfortunate, I think, if we undertook a program which continued down that path but caused a tremendous amount of garbage cans and bins and all this stuff to go into the stream, whether it's a recycling stream or a refuse stream, that would be unfortunate. If we can't get around it, we can't get around it, but I think that would be unfortunate.
Alderman Kilburg? And Marks?
I'm a little confused. It'd be nice if we had a little detail to explain these spreadsheets. Okay, I have an electrical meter here in Geneva. Okay, if I'm metered, okay, explain this to me. Okay, the orange, okay. My refuse. Do I have to buy a tote?
For the recycling. Orange option.
Orange option
is the option you are dealing with the past 5 years.
Okay, so I can buy stickers on a weekly basis. Okay, recycling. Is it going to cost me anything if I have a meter? In other words, I have my blue recycling bin. Can I continue to set that out at the street?
Clarification. Now, a meter. Are you talking about a meter on your house?
Yeah. In other words, if...
Oh, this is not... This.
No, because actually a meter gets into play down below here, doesn't it?
No. This
with the blue?
This will all go through the waste hauler. They're going to send out a bill, monthly bill, that says you owe $15.98 a month.
Okay. I didn't understand.
It's not going on the ref. I guess I should have clarified. This is not going on to your refuse bill that you currently get from Geneva. This is coming from the waste hauler, which is the way our current program is structured if you're renting.
So what if you have a meter in Geneva and you don't have any type of a refuse program? What do we do? In other words, if you don't sign up, if they send out a solicitation to join.
This will be for all residential properties.
If they don't pay it.
So what if they say, I'm not signing up?
It's required for all single-family houses.
So in other words, if you have a meter, then you're going to be required to be a part of the program.
Well, I wouldn't say that because there's meters all over. I mean, there's apartments have meters.
Well, they have ways, though, don't they? I mean,
this is a residential program. This isn't for the commercial, industrial properties.
What about townhomes?
Yeah.
Townhomes, less than, I think, 4 to 6 buildings. Okay. The ones that have a curbside that they currently use are there, but an apartment building is not going to be part of this program.
Okay. So let's go back to the orange again. So if I'm recycling and I have a blue bin, can I continue to use my blue bin?
Correct.
To recycle? Okay. Okay, now yard waste, orange program. Can I continue to set my garbage out and put a sticker on it the way that I have done in the past?
It's identical to the current program.
Okay. Let's go to the...
The only difference is that there are additional options that we
allow. Right, if you want to exercise those.
Right.
To the beige program. Okay. Refuse. Okay. If I have a garbage can like Mr. Brown and... if I want to continue to set that out and put a sticker on it, can I do that?
This program is identical to the current program, except everyone gets a recycling tote. So the 65-gallon toter.
What if you had a garbage can and you set it out with a sticker on it?
A garbage can with a stick. You're still using stickers for all garbage and yard waste. Recycling, you still could use your bins that you have, but you're going to get a recycling cart that'll be 65 gallon that you would be able to put in all your recycling.
What if you wanted to continue to use the blue bin because
you can continue to use the blue bin.
But you'll get the 65
gallon. You're paying for this.
You're gonna get a right.
But you're paying for the 65.
You're paying for the 65 through the sticker price change. You can see it's 285 versus 270. That's the difference.
Oh. So with okay, and if we were to go with the blue program then We'd be required to use the bin, and there would be no other option. In other words, if you had a garbage can, you could no longer use that.
Right.
In other words, that would be your current garbage can would be obsolete. Your blue bin for recycling would be obsolete.
Correct.
And yet to be determined who would pay and who wouldn't pay. In other words, if you decided you didn't want to have garbage collection, you could opt out.
This is based on the option number 3 is based on the city council passing an ordinance that requires all the residential properties, the single family and that, to be in the program because they need to determine that's how they base their costs.
Is that predicated on 7,000 or is that predicated on 10,000?
That's predicated on the 7,000. The 10,000 is industrial, commercial, and those properties. They will not be part of this program.
The ordinance in place now requires all residential dwelling units to participate in the program we've enacted by ordinance.
Yes, but we don't buy stickers when we're in Florida for the winter.
But if you don't buy stickers, you're not participating.
Right.
Correct.
And if you're not setting out garbage, you're not participating.
But when you do, then you are participating. In other words, they'll come to your home and if something's out there, they'll cruise by if it's not.
Right, but
they're on every street. Okay.
Yeah. There's a big investment for the haulers to bring totes to everybody. So in order to make it advantageous for that, that's part of the requirement.
I had one other question. What's to prevent 4 neighbors that get along keeping their own garbage can, bringing in a 95-gallon toter, and all of them on Thursday morning dumping their garbage into the toter and only paying the 1 fee?
That's why we want to avoid them from allowing that to happen. Because if we get everybody to do it, now the waste hauler has the same amount of garbage, but he's only got bills for a quarter of the town. They can't afford that. So that's
what about Mr. Orange up here? How's he preventing that?
Yeah.
That's part of the concern with the sticker program.
Well, they're prepared to run the risk, though, because they're offering a price where the blue
they factored that into the sticker. You're correct.
Mr. Blue's dictating that to us.
Correct. There's a risk involved with all the programs, really. And they looked at the different options. And
the risk is to the hauler, not to the resident, though, right?
In the blue, it's to the resident.
In the blue, it's to the
resident. Well, it locks in the sticker price. However many stickers you use, if you use a lot more stickers, then it's
right.
Not advantageous.
Hey, thank you.
Is it safe to say we can get rid of the toter program?
Yeah, the blue one.
Can we focus?
Let's get rid of the blue one.
Can we focus in on option one and two?
Yes.
We don't need to make a decision tonight. No. We need to digest all this. And
right. Well,
we can
come back next week
and continue. But
I would get
Dan, I would say the blue is probably the least preferred right now.
Let's have Mr. Maladra speak his mind, because I think I have you down. No.
No, I think it was
we have some Marks.
People,
excuse me.
We have some people in the audience we might fit in at some point, Mr. Mayor. After Mr. Marks. Well, there's some people in the audience we
Oh, absolutely. I wanted Mr. Marks I had down, then I was going to turn to anybody else in the dais. Then
thank you.
Absolutely.
Dan, you had a comment. No,
I was just going to say if we rule out the tote program, which would be the blue plus the other color options, and go to just the orange and gray or whatever color you want to call that, option one and two,
mm-hmm.
The decision there is current program, use the bins, and then have the options for the other things, or current program plus the recycle tote. Do we have it? I mean, if everybody's locked in on the current program, then just go that way.
But the council provides direction. We would like to hear from folks who are joining us this evening in the audience. But Mr. Marks, you have the floor.
Yeah.
That's option two. Sorry.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Dan, probably for me, the blue is probably the least favorable right now, so you know that. I think option two, giving people a 65-gallon tote, is going to probably cause people to recycle a little more. It's a bigger container. I think those smaller containers, as people fill up, then they go to the garbage. So to me, it's really down between the orange and the brown is what I see as the better selection at this point. Because, again, I think you are going to find a lot of problems in the blue area of billing people and getting them. That ordinance is going to be a little harder to do it. But realistically, I think when you look at this, the brown option, for lack of a better color, is probably the one that probably promotes some recycling, because it is giving people larger containers to put the recycling in, and I think that was a question. And the cost for that recycling is really only costing 15 cents a sticker is what it's really running.
I was just going to add one of the things that the tote does do, it has the cover. And one of the complaints that we get a lot is
it
the
blows,
bins.
And that was
things blowing around. People have multiple bins. You'll be able to have, you know, three of those bins will be the 65-gallon, and you can actually get the 95 if you're really recycling, or you can get the 35 if you don't recycle that much.
But the other thing I just want to clarify, none of this billing is really going to go through the city then. It's
no.
All, and none of it.
Any
it's
of the just, options will not
okay.
go. It's all through the waste hauler.
Okay.
I do have a...
Okay.
So.
Anything else, Mr.
No, I'm fine right now.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Maladra?
But it was something that Rich was saying that sort of triggered this thought. Really, the option one and option two is like, you know, a pay for what you use
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
Yeah.
The problem we have with forcing somebody to go with the toter program is you're giving them a bin that's larger than like the example that Alderman Brown used or I used or Alderman Vogelsberg. You're making them pay monthly for a bin that they're not going to mm-hmm. fill up. So I just like a program that requires people to pay for what they use.
I agree.
From the audience, anyone wishes to comment on this? I can't see how. Mr. Bruno.
No.
Forgive me for my poor eyesight here.
Mike Bruno, 522 Fulton Street. Sounds like that's the direction we're going, but I think it's if we're going to set an example as a municipality, I think we need to make sure that people pay for what they use, and I think we should wipe the all-inclusive package off the table. Thanks.
Mayor, over here.
Isn't it true, Mr. Bruno, you haven't put out garbage in 4 years? The garage is just an absolute disgrace. Yes, madam, in the back, and then this gentleman in the front.
Lady first.
I forgot to ask Mr. Bruno for his address as well, but oh, you did good. Excuse me. Sorry.
Sandy Ellis, 209 Peyton Street. I probably
and with you, Mr. Brown. I'm trying to get rid of junk. I have a blue bin that is about this high, so there is another size out there. Half of that gets filled with junk mail. I buy only fresh fruits and vegetables. I have very little recycling. I use that senior bag that lasts me for 2 weeks, the $2 bag. I would object to having another 65-gallon container in the garage that I will never use, and I don't need more bins in my garage. So I'm glad to see you're going to, what's the correct word, deep six, that option. But let's go with the option where people pay for what they're actually using. I don't want to pay more.
Thank you. This gentleman in the front row.
John Quirin, 805 May Street. Alderman Brown represents me, and I do want to thank this toter program for getting me involved in this, because if I was forced to have a toter, I wouldn't need a recycling bin, because I'll just throw everything in the other garbage can, because there's no incentive to recycle. And I am a recycler, composter. I put out garbage maybe twice a month. So that's why I came up here, to think that I was going to have to pay for garbage, you know, a toter every month when I don't use it, wouldn't fill it. That's why I came up here. So I like the fact that not too many people seem to go for that option. So thank you.
And thank you for coming. I spoke with this gentleman on the phone, and I said I would carry his concerns to the council. And I said, but you're more than welcome. And he said, are you sure? And I said, the mayor will make you absolutely welcome. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the gentleman? There you go, sir. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Like an
not that guy in the back, man.
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Bob Pfister. I'm the Municipal Marketing Manager for Advanced Disposal. I'm very proud of the price that we quoted for the service here. We want to be your service provider. We provide service to St. Charles to your north, Batavia to your south. We provide excellent service. We would like to point out that the pay-by-the-bag program, the volume-based program, is the most environmentally friendly program that you can have. The one that promotes recycling the most would be option two, which is a 65-gallon recycling toter. We instituted that 5 years ago in the city of Wheaton and immediately saw an increase in recycling. They were on a volume-based program with the bins also. But when you talk about pure recycling, that's the one on the volume-based program that's going to cause the most recycling. What I do want to point out, though, is in our option one, we understand the residents with the size of the toters and maybe not want one. You have 20-gallon bins that we will collect. They may be good, so people may not need those. To rent a 65-gallon recycling toter is $1.20 a month. So we came in with a price to encourage recycling on option one that gives people the ability to get a 65-gallon toter at a decent, low rate when they maybe want to change out their 20-gallon that they have right now. But they can still use their 20-gallon. With the 65-gallon toter, you can easily fit three of those recycling bins in there. The convenience of that 65-gallon recycling toter is amazing. I won't kid you. You'll get a little bit of pushback when you start it because it's just change. After 60 days, you can't get that cart away from people. The convenience is great. So I would really encourage you to remain with options one and two. We really want to be your service provider. We came in very aggressively, and we really look forward to partnering with Geneva. I'm available for any questions. If I could address the concern here with people with the 95-gallon together, it happens. It just happens when people put 95 gallons together. It's just a risk of doing business. So we factor that in. So.
Mr. Pfister, is it spelled like the faucet or just F-I-S?
It's P-F-I-S-T-E-R, like the faucets, if I was related.
Like the hotel in Milwaukee?
But if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on our proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Sir, please join us. It's tag team time.
Good evening. Tim Littner and Steve Vogren, Republic Services. Just a couple of points of clarification, and I don't want to muddy the waters, but under our option one, Mr. Dinges did hit on it. We have approximately 1,800 1,800 people renting 95-gallon carts currently at the $22.50. We sharpened our pencil on that price in our option one and rolled that price back. And with that, every one of those residents would get a default 95-gallon recycling cart. That's the default. They could pick a 35 or a 65 at no extra cost. So there would be a savings, and that equates to about 25% of the total residents, 7,000. Do the quick math. Certainly, the another point of clarification, but it sounds like it's off the table, was our modified program. And again, the recycling cart was part of that monthly fee at no charge, but it sounds like that cart program is totally off the table. So I just wanted to mention that. Again, service provider for 10 years. I think we've built a good, and we're dependable, consistent, reliable, built a good relationship with the city. And certainly, we do have a dedicated supervisor in town. Safety is number one for us. Part of our even mapping for our routes is we have no left-hand turns driving from the right side and no backing from the right side, no zigzagging, snaking down the street. Again, concerned about safety. Certainly, you know, you do have a big decision in front of you, 7,000 homes that we impact week in, week out, month over month, you know, for 12 months of the year, definitely. Steve, I don't know if you want to.
A couple quick things. When you talk about that volume-based program, option number one, when you add a 35 and a 65-gallon cart option, you will see the number of cart customers increase dramatically because you now have a lower price option. And with our option, with our offer, every 35-gallon tote customer, 65 and 95, will have the option for recycling cart. 95 is the default, but every customer there can choose what size they want for recycling cart. You'll see at least, I would say, 40% participation in cart program by going to our offer where you have a twin cart program, if you will. Again, so if you have a 35-gallon garbage cart, you can choose a 35-gallon recycling cart, a 65-gallon recycling cart, or a 95-gallon recycling cart. It will definitely increase your recycling volumes. It will also give your customers the option to either go to a sticker program or have the cart option with both a garbage and a recycling cart. So it really gives you the benefit of all your programs that you're looking for. All your concerns you talked about are addressed. Mr. Cummings, you talked about the recycling bins. Those recycling bins can be recycled if the customer chooses. What some customers do when they have a cart program, they leave the cart or the bin inside the house, take that bin to the garage, and then empty those recyclables into the cart in the garage as an option. The refuse containers could be used for overflow as another example. The advantage of carts, too, is we have the liability responsibility for that cart for the entire length of the contract. So if it breaks, it's our responsibility to replace that. So the homeowner never has to purchase another container again other than for overflow. If there is overflow, you can just use a bag and a sticker.
Any questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Kilberg?
Do the totes encourage organization and screen the containers that we're using right now? I think what that does is it requires the homeowner to organize their recycling, to screen their recycling, and make sure that there aren't items in there that shouldn't be in there. I think a tote, a lot of times, the kids take it out to the garage and you got a garbage bin and you got a recycling bin. It could go in one, it could go in the other. And I'm just wondering, doesn't that present problems to your collectors when you have these totes? Essentially, you come in with a truck, you pick it up and you dump it, and you get to your processing plant. Don't you find that you have a lot more non-recyclables?
So any... First off, most people are based on behavior, so most people are already in tune to recycling. So people aren't going to necessarily change their behavior because they already know how to recycle. What you will find, though, is it's so much more convenient when you have the cart in the garage that you will recycle more. And I would throw an offer up to anyone on the board. If you want to try a recycling cart, we'd be more than willing to pilot it at your house for everyone on the board to try it. Until you try it, you don't understand. I didn't understand it until I actually saw it and said, wow, now I understand it, now I get it. From a hauler perspective, what happens now is every driver picks up this recycling bin in this form. Bends down, picks it up, and dumps it. It's a very manual process, almost archaic. When you go to a cart process, it reduces the risk of that driver. Now it's an automated process that dumps into the truck automatically. So you're reducing the risk of the driver. It's a safer, more effective system, quite frankly.
I can understand it'll reduce workman's comp claims, but I'm just saying, though, if you got a 95-gallon refuse recycling tote out there, people are going to throw in whole boxes. They're not going to break boxes down, I don't think. I mean, do they?
Some do. I mean, if it fits in, as long as it fits in the recycling bin, the truck will compact it, so it's okay. You don't necessarily have to break it down. That's the other advantage of a recycling toter, is you don't have to break down the material as much. Again, it goes back to convenience, really, at the end of the day.
Are they different colors?
Go ahead.
The cart is the same. The lid is different. So the lid is a different color. So
between the garbage and the recycling.
Correct.
That's correct.
Green and blue?
Gray and blue, green and blue.
Kids can understand colors. I'm not sure they understand lids.
Any other questions for these gentlemen from either the dais or the audience? And certainly any other questions for Mr. Pfister, like the faucet? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So now where do you go, Dan?
Yeah, thanks for making garbage so fun, Dan.
Yeah, again, we'll bring this back next week for continued discussion.
That would be the plan.
Is there anything you want to elucidate? Or
the plan would be to bring back next Monday.
Your enthusiasm is overwhelming.
I think he feels he got beat.
We have two options now. We at least nailed it down to two options, I think.
Do you want to bring this back for continued discussion, or do you want a recommendation?
I would like recommendation. It'll be a committee meeting.
Correct.
And at that, I'd be looking for direction to move to council.
Is everyone comfortable with that next Monday evening, April 8th, there will be a request for...
Mr. Mayor, I think Dan has suggested we're down to two options, but the gentleman from Republic has suggested they would like us to continue thinking about their lower option, which is still an option number three, right?
I think what they... you have in their option number one, which would be on the first page of the packet I gave you. Mm-hmm. What they were saying is that the refuse toter, you can see 35 gallon is $15.50. That includes a recycling toter. But that's optional. However, your sticker price is then $3. That could be on the table.
We're back on page one here, where you have...
Back on page one of the packet, correct.
If nobody objects, I think we do probably need more discussion next Monday evening. If at the end of that discussion there's a recommendation, we can certainly acknowledge that. But I think to come back on the 8th and expect consensus might be a little aggressive. But again, I'll defer to the majority. So.
If we can suggest questions during the week to Mr. Dinges,
I presume
they will be answered en masse to the council as usual.
As always, absolutely. And we'll present a summary of all questions asked. That can be presented at the committee of the whole meeting and posted as well. So,
a little hard to absorb all this in half an hour.
Well, we can also get rid of this in one of the totes if you want.
I can also send this in PDF if someone wants to be able to blow it up.
Sure. Mr. Kilberg?
It'd be helpful to have a little commentary with this other than just all numbers and maybe the strengths and weaknesses from your perspective. I mean, essentially, you're asking us to process... I mean, four pages of numbers.
Well,
I mean, from your perspective and from the city staff's perspective, I would think that there are some of these, one of these programs probably might be preferred, right? Don't you have an opinion?
When we were going through it, we wanted to provide options. The waste haulers, what we were hearing is the momentum is towards totes, as you heard. It's... works better for them. And as I had put in my weekly reports and gave you guys the options we were looking at, I kind of explained that totes is kind of where
seems the industry is going, but it all depends on where the dollars and cents comes. And we've got the dollars now. Now it's time to look at it and say, does it make sense now or not? And right now what I'm hearing is maybe not yet.
Well, because your 1,800, your demand for totes from 1,800 people is 25% of our total. I think that we have to look at how much, You know, does the average Geneva customer use 65 gallons worth of garbage? And I think the answer, what you're hearing here is no, they don't.
Well, we'll find out, because I think I agree with what Republic said. Now that we have an option for the 35, the 65, and the 95, I think there will be, well, I think there'll be more people that will look at the tote option. Right now it was a 95, and the cost was $22.55. Mm-hmm. Now, based on, if you go off of Advance proposal or Republic's, you're looking at, it's actually cheaper now with, $20, or you have an option for a 65 for 19 or 35 for 18. So, I mean,
so
there's more options.
So take that person who does not currently use 65 gallons worth of garbage, you lower the price and encourage them to use 65 gallons worth of garbage. Or 35.
Well, it's up to them to decide whether they want to rent or not.
Alderman Vogelsberg?
Oh, thank you. Dan, you said you were going to send that a PDF. Is it possible? Is it in an Excel spreadsheet?
Yes.
Can you send that? Because I like to just compare year one of each one so I can put them all side by side, if you don't mind.
And I can put some commentary as what the program is. Option one is the existing program sticker, and I can go through it.
Yeah, as soon as that's available, just post that as well under a special bulletin on the website.
Dan, can I just clarify the Republic Services proposal? So,
which proposal are you talking about? Option
one, the large
okay
salmon. So you have a fixed monthly fee for refuse and recycling. So that's $16.08. I'm not sure I understood that.
This option is our current program. So it's a sticker program.
That
everybody's on
a sticker program.
For those individuals that want to have the tote, here's the pricing for it.
I didn't understand
it's
that. That's what I needed to be clear. So what it is it's a regular sticker at $3. You can do the same as you want. But if you want the totes, for a 65-gallon tote for both, one for refuse and one for recycling, would be $3.25?
No, it'd be $17.25.
Because you take the 16 point.
It's $17.25. Recycling, and I'll clarify that.
Okay.
Recycling tote, that's if you want an additional.
Okay, if you could just clarify that, because that was a little miss, but that's fine. Thank you.
Anyone else from the audience or the dais? This material will be.
Mr. McQuillan.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't see. Forgive me. Oh, Mr. McQuillan.
Bob McQuillan, 2677 Berkshire Drive in Geneva. Certainly a confusing and maybe an enlightening discussion, but I would suggest, since we're going to do a committee of the whole meeting again next week, and there seem to be two companies involved, that each of the company be given 10 minutes to explain their programs to the alderman. Certainly someone who is running the program knows it much better than anyone else, even though Dan did a good job, but they can give you the pros of their program. That would take, if they're given 10 minutes apiece, that's 20 minutes. I would also suggest that either photos of the actual totes and bags and coats and hats and whatever else they have be brought in so that we can actually view it, and the millions of people at home can view it too. So I think it would be very productive if the Committee of the Whole allowed both companies to make a PowerPoint presentation no longer than 10 minutes apiece. Thank you.
Anyone else? From the dais? We will now discuss the city's refuse program.
No. No, I think that's up to the vendors. I mean, if they're soliciting our business, they can certainly bring in whatever they want to. If they're not interested in our business and they don't want to create a visual image for us, that's their prerogative, I guess. Otherwise, we're going to be making a decision based off of
Spreadsheets.
Figures.
The spreadsheets.
I don't think we limit anyone from bringing in any.
The floor is theirs. And
samples.
If not, believe it or not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Marks, seconded by Hill. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Oh yeah, you bring that back. You're right on.